Okay, right here, sir. Yes, sir.
What is your vision for the exploration of space?
Well, I mean, it's all about what David Bowie sang about. Ground control to Major Tom. Help me. Take your protein pill. Oh, no, no, not that. Here we go.
You're fighting, man.
Only at a town hall in New Hampshire.
Yep, we're at the stage where candidates will actually sing for your vote. From New Hampshire Public Radio, it's Primarily Politics. I'm Brady Carlson. Coming up, we need to talk about debates. Also, Granite State mega rallies as viewed from the ground level, and campaign voicemails magically transformed into garbled emails. But first, let's take a look back at the primary news of the week through this week's three words. Word number one this week is out of state. That's a single word, right? Anyway, our first in the nation primary is just over a week from now, but reporter Casey McDermott says with the Iowa caucuses on February 1st, this state is actually pretty quiet.
Since Sunday, there have been 15 candidate events in New Hampshire. In Iowa, 160 candidate appearances.
The candidates will come back for that final week, but until Iowans do their thing, candidates are basically going to mail it in here for a while. Which brings me to word number two, bulk rate. If you're a New Hampshire voter, those glossy, full-color mailers have been piling up in your mailbox. Some are directly from campaigns, others are from super PACs and outside groups, and that has voters like Susan Burrow of Amherst more than a little puzzled.
Someone's going after each other, and what's frustrating, because I just got a bunch today, is there are organizations or PACs, you know, who are sending it, but you can't tell exactly who they're for.
Candidates looking to do some face-to-face attacking in New Hampshire will get their chance very soon. Word number three is debate. The Republicans will be back on the debate stage February 6th at St. Anselm College. The Democratic National Committee, meanwhile, had not scheduled a post-Iowa pre-New Hampshire debate for their candidates, but executive editor Trent Spinner of the New Hampshire Union Leader says his paper thought maybe there should be one.
I called Chuck Todd from NBC News. He got the president of NBC on the phone, and the president of NBC said, let's make this happen. The DNC has been silent, and so we are now calling it the not-yet-sanctioned debate.
So you feel like this is a go?
Oh, there will be a union leader MSNBC debate in New Hampshire on Thursday.
And now all three Democratic candidates have agreed to appear at that debate. Let's talk about debates, though, for a moment. If this is supposed to be the place where retail politics matters, should we be welcoming these kinds of debates? And are debates playing a bigger role in the primary process than an actual primary like New Hampshire's? Joining me now to look at these questions are two debate experts. Aaron Call is the director of the debate program at the University of Michigan and the Michigan Debate Institutes. Thomas Holohan is on the phone from the Annenberg School of Communication at the University of Southern California, where he's a professor. Welcome to you both.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
How much is a presidential campaign these days driven by the debates?
I would not say that campaigns are driven by debates, but debates are key moments in campaigns. They're opportunities for audiences to really plug in and pay attention to what's happening, and they're opportunities for candidates to try to differentiate themselves from others in the race.
In addition to the debates themselves, the debates set the cycles, the media cycles, for then the next several days or up to weeks. And so the content from what happens inside of the debate then really affects the retail politicking and what happens on the campaign trail for days or weeks to follow.
One of the things that the research tells us is that particularly early in the campaign, the only people who are really paying attention are those who are keenly partisan. This campaign has been unusual because there's actually been a larger audience for the primary debate than is typically the case, particularly on the Republican side, because Donald Trump, of course, is such a strong media personality. And it's like watching a NASCAR race to see the crashes. People want to see the conflict. They want to see what outrageous things he might do.
Does that then potentially perpetuate itself, that idea that if conflict brings more ratings, to the debates, then the debate should feature more conflict.
The moderators are certainly aware of this, and they try to get as many challenges between the candidates as possible. And the advent of the split screen on TV, I think, aids with that. The moderator will ask really suggestive questions to try to get a back and forth between candidates, and then you have a split screen that shows the reactions both to their speaking and the reaction to the candidate who's not. And so I think all of that is part of the reason that's changing the format and the content.
There's going to be a big difference, however. One has to be mindful that when you get 5 to 10 people on a stage, it's more like a joint press conference than anything resembling a real debate. When you get to a general election, if we get 2 people on the stage, it's much different form of contest, and the differences between the candidates are more stark. So I think the contests are going to be very different when we get to the general election debate.
Well, I'm glad that we had both of you on our stage today. Tom and Aaron, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thomas Holohan of USC's Annenberg School and Aaron Call of the University of Michigan. Coming up, we'd like you to vote for Jab. When voicemail to speech befuddles a prospective voter, it's primarily politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.
If you are interested in this podcast, you would probably love our new iPhone app. It is all about politics. It is called State of Democracy. You can use it to get an exclusive daily update on the New Hampshire primary race. You can use it to look at photos of the candidates, find out where they're going to be with interactive maps, and so much more. Go to the iTunes store right now and search for State of Democracy and download it today.
Welcome back. If there's one question New Hampshire reporters get the most this time of year, it's this one. What is it like to cover the candidates and their events? And the answer really depends on who the candidate is and what kind of event they're holding. At a house party or a town hall meeting, the mood is usually low key. The candidates are usually more available. But at a huge rally with thousands of people on hand, it can be very different. What is it like to attend a big campaign rally in New Hampshire? NHPR's Josh Rogers and Dan Barrick are here to answer that very question. Hi there.
Hey, Brady.
How are you, Brady?
Good. We're going to use the most obvious case study here to talk about what it's like at these big events, Donald Trump rallies. Dan, this isn't the first time that a candidate has had gigantic rallies with thousands of people on hand. I mean, I think back to when Barack Obama was running in 2008 and he kept bringing Oprah to the Verizon Arena in Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, Obama, especially near the end in New Hampshire, was drawing giant crowds. I mean, Bernie Sanders, obviously this year is the equivalent on the Democratic side. I mean, there is something a little bit different about the Trump rallies. I mean, it's almost this performance art. They're big, giant rallies, but his level of connection, both through body language and eye contact and just kind of tossing lines to the crowd, there is a real sort of tactile connection going on there.
He does there's a call and response, like, we're going to build a blank, and everyone says wall, and who's going to pay for it? Mexico. You know, Trump's spat with the union leader and its publisher, Joe McQuaid, has, you know, been going on for some time. And, you know, the speech in Nashua, you know, he spent a good 15 minutes going after McQuaid, and he mentions that, you know, you've got this paper and this guy, Joe McQuaid, and this, like, boo from the crowd. And, you know, how many of these people know much or anything about Joe McQuaid, and how much of them are just kind of like, it's like some kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of thing where they know how to react
this,
in a certain way.
This is where you boo, yeah.
I don't know.
I get the sense that a lot of people in the crowd have been there multiple times or seen rallies, seen these things on TV or the internet. They will
choose their own
sort of
adventure.
Like, yeah, almost sort of like this implied connection with his supporters goes beyond just a politician asking for you to support me so I can get into the office, but this shared sense of grievance and outrage and anger that they're all feeding off of. That's the feel of it, you know, when you're there.
Well, the feel. What is the feel like when you're sort of surrounded by the crowd even before the event has begun? I mean, what are you seeing and hearing?
Well, Trump is such a phenomenon at this point, not only political but sort of cultural, that there's this traveling Trump economy that sort of follows him around to these rallies. So you go there and you're waiting in line to get in. You're wanted by Secret Service and the lines are often long. And, you know, when I was at Farmington on Monday, there was several competing Trump vendors trying to hawk to the crowd buttons and hats and Make America Great scarves. There were several other candidates for office in New Hampshire working the lines or handing out their cards. He attracts
these crowds.
It's a fine
place to busk, essentially.
Yeah.
This is the campaign that seems to draw the loudest, at least, if not the most, protests
inside of each of those events. So, I mean, do they acknowledge that in any way?
Well, they play an interesting bit of tape at the beginning of the events, which is something that, you know, I've never heard anything like. And maybe we'll have a listen to that.
Please do not touch or harm the protester. This is a peaceful rally. In order to notify the law enforcement officers of the location of the protester, please hold a rally sign over your head and start chanting, Trump, Trump, Trump. Ask the people around you to do likewise until the officer removes the protester. Thank you for helping us make America great again.
Hearing that announcement about what you're supposed to do when the protester starts up is, it strikes me in two ways. One, it sounds a little bit like the preparation that you get when you're on an airplane. Like, you know, if you have children with you, please instruct them to chant Trump before you start up your own chant. But, you know, but I mean, it's also that it comes back to that idea of this is a collective experience. Right. Everybody's here for the
you're
same thing.
You're at an event, right? This is not just a campaign speech. You're at an event and it might get rowdy here. So get ready.
Well, what else goes into establishing that big event feel compared to a campaign rally feel? I mean, most campaigns will have pageantry and signs and lights and music. Are there different elements at a Trump rally, or are they used differently?
I mean, Trump has a set list that he uses that features music from Cats. It's got some Pavarotti. It's got some classic rock. Sometimes he comes out to Eye of the Tiger. Lately, it's been more Adele, Rolling in the Deep, I think is the number. But one thing that's interesting about Trump is that while there are sometimes speakers who come out, people, officials from his campaign or semi-prominent people locally who support him coming out well before Trump hits the stage, when it's Trump's turn, it's never somebody saying, and now here's
There's
the next
no
president, it's Donald
off.
Trump,
yeah.
Like, let's shake hands, yeah. And, you know, then I'm off the stage. It's a voice over the PA system saying, like, the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
And there were people actually, you know, holding up their cell phones with some flame app on it as though they were holding up the lighters. When the anticipation had reached the point where it was clear that Trump was about to strut out from the curtain, every cell phone in the room was held aloft to capture that moment.
So if we come back to that original question, what is it like to go to these events? I mean, is arena rock essentially a way to describe what you see and hear when you go?
The soundtrack would certainly lead you in that direction. I don't know if we're at the point where bootleg cassettes are going to be passed around by fevered fans anytime.
Well, thanks for cluing us in, guys.
Thanks, Brady.
Good to be here.
That's NHPR's Dan Barrick and Josh Rogers. Campaign rallies, debates, mailers, these are all part of the final weeks of the New Hampshire primary. So are automated phone calls from campaigns. My colleague Rebecca Lavoy has gotten plenty of these calls over the years. She lets them go to voicemail, and then her voicemail system transcribes the calls, sometimes not so accurately, into emails. Here now, some campaign messages as translated by the voicemail-to-speech function on our smartphones.
Vicky, this is Kim calling on behalf of Governor Jeb Bush here in Granite State. We kicked the Second Amendment seriously, and no candidate knows that better than Jeb.
Sorry that I missed. I'm calling today on behalf of my wife, Carly, who, as you know, is Republican candidate for president. I wanted to call and tell you a bit about who Parler uses a person that she wants to do for our country.
Good afternoon. I'm calling as a volunteer with Gov Case 6 office here in Concord, New Hampshire on February 9th. We'll be testing our votes in the most important presidential election in our history. Please join me in supporting Gov John K. Sick for President on February 9th, which is a strong America. This is Safe America. Thank you so much for your time.
As president, if you have overkill, anti-gun executive orders on day one. It's presidency. As Governor Jeff expanded concealed carry permit and provide a free hunting like you, just you military servicemen and women in Florida. Please get out and vote for a proven leader and stock supporter of the Second Amendment, Jeb Buss.
Thank you so much for your time, and we hope to see you and have a good call as paid for by Marco Rubio.
Please visit citizencarly.com for carlyforamerica.com.
Paid for by Job 2016.
This call is paid... Hold on. This call is paid... This call is paid for by King for Export America.
That montage of campaign voicemail translations gone wrong was produced by NHPR's Rebecca Lavoie. One last note before we leave you this week. Longtime New Hampshire primary watchers will know the name Martin Gross. He was mayor of Concord for 3 terms. He was a fixture at the New Hampshire State House. He also helped our station, New Hampshire Public Radio, get started way back in 1981. Well, Martin Gross died this week at age 77. Among his New Hampshire primary highlights, he once played host to former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter in early 1976 and served as the host of our primary night coverage in 1984, at least for 9 seconds.
That's do retail politics rule in the United States? And Eliza Hobson has just stepped in for Clark Dumont, who's gone on a pizza run. And what do you think, Eliza?
Well,
Martin Gross on NHPR's airwaves in 1984. Hope they saved a slice of pizza for you, Martin. And that's all for this edition of Primarily Politics. We'll be with you every week through the New Hampshire primary, looking at the much-heralded moments on the campaign trail and the merely head-scratching ones. We had help this week from Sarah Ashworth, Dan Barrick, Rebecca Lavoie, Virginia Prescott, Taylor Quimby, Josh Rogers, and Logan Shannon. We had help last week from Susan Posner, so belated thanks to her. You can find previous episodes of the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, and NHPR.org. At each of those places, you can tell us what you thought of the show, or you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Brady Carlson, all one word. We'll be back with you next week. Thanks again for listening to Primarily Politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.